From Maine Public Radio and mainepublic.org, I'm Nicole Ogrisco with the news on this day in Maine, Monday, June 2nd, 2025. Gun owners' rights groups are vowing to file a lawsuit unless Democratic lawmakers hold a public hearing on a ballot initiative proposing a red flag gun law in Maine. Kevin Miller has more.
Republican lawmakers and representatives of three gun owners' rights groups are accusing Democratic legislators of blatantly ignoring a state law that requires the legislature to hold public hearings on citizen-initiated ballot questions. This fall, Maine residents will likely vote on a red flag ballot question that would allow family members to directly petition a judge to force dangerous individuals to temporarily relinquish their guns. The Democratic co-chairs of the Judiciary Committee say Maine's Constitution doesn't require a public hearing, and the Constitution supersedes state law. But the decision to forego a public hearing isn't sitting well with gun owners' rights groups, who believe a high-profile hearing will expose bipartisan opposition to a red flag law. David Trahan, a former state lawmaker who now leads the Sportsmen's Alliance of Maine, says his group, the NRA, and the organization Gun Owners of Maine are ready to challenge that decision in court.
The legislature passed this statute. It's in law. And what she's basically saying is that the chairs of the committee do not have to follow the law. And sorry, but they do. And so we'll see what the court has to say.
Maine currently has a yellow flag law that only allows police, not family members, to begin the gun confiscation process for people deemed to pose a danger to themselves or others. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Kevin Miller.
In a radio address over the weekend, Governor Janet Mills took aim at the federal budget bill that's now being considered by the U.S. Senate. Mills said it would make steep cuts to Medicaid in order to help fund tax breaks for the wealthy.
Maine care coverage is especially important in rural counties, where health care coverage may not be affordable or accessible based on their unemployment rates and average household incomes.
Mills says 40% of the populations in Aroostook, Washington, and Somerset counties rely on Maine care, the state version of Medicaid, for health coverage. Cuts to Medicaid are expected because of proposed work requirements under the congressional bill. Republicans say it's a common-sense measure, but critics say research has found that work requirements do nothing to boost employment and merely kick people off of the program. Residents of Maine's unorganized territories say they're shocked by the recent spike in property values and are concerned about what it might mean for their property tax bills. Caitlin Bedayan has more.
Keith Smith says he's lived on Moosehead Lake for more than 20 years. His home sits on less than an acre of land, and the property's value is more than double what it was last year. And he says the neighboring back lot he owns has jumped to five times its previous value.
And we live in the unorganized territory. We get no services, you know. And so, you know, why the increase? I mean, that's drastic.
Sharon Huntley, spokesperson for the Maine Department of Administrative and Financial Services, says the revaluation was based on review and analysis of data on property sales, construction, and other related costs. She adds that property taxes may not necessarily increase with revaluations, which are needed to prevent inequities. But Smith says higher values and taxes are pushing longtime residents like him out of the area. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Caitlin Bedayan.
The Department of Homeland Security appears to have taken down a posted list of so-called sanctuary jurisdictions, including the city of Portland and Cumberland and Hancock counties, that it accused of defying federal immigration laws. The Trump administration has not said whether jurisdictions on the list posted last week would still be notified, but in a statement, a senior official for the department said the list is being constantly revised. Cumberland County Sheriff Kevin Joyce says the notification he received last week was similar to one from Trump administration advisors a few months ago, and the city of Portland says it has not yet received a notification. Supporters of a new state law say it will help track how much of Maine's woodlands are tied up in growing markets to offset greenhouse gas pollution. Under the measure, landowners have to report details of their enrollment in voluntary carbon programs. Peter McGuire has more.
The records will provide a better understanding of changing management and uses of the state's private woodlands, says Morton Mosswild with the Maine Forest Service.
So it's just really informative for not just the state, but for all kinds of decision makers and policy makers to understand what is happening with this market.
Forest carbon programs pay landowners to steward trees in ways that maximize absorption of warming emissions to compensate for pollution elsewhere. But the markets have been criticized for inflating their benefits and helping companies avoid the transition away from fossil fuels. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Peter McGuire.
An effort to open a Catholic high school in Auburn this fall following the closure of St. Dominic's Academy has been abandoned. The group behind the campaign says it was unable to negotiate an affordable lease at the former St. Dom's campus and had explored operating out of Holy Family in Lewiston. Backers ultimately determined that the funding for operating the entire year at either location was not guaranteed. In a statement released on Facebook, the group says it will continue to work to secure the future of Catholic secondary education in the Lewiston-Auburn area. Advocates for older Mainers say they're concerned about the loss of future federal funding for Meals on Wheels and other programs. Congress has yet to reauthorize funding for the Older Americans Act, which provides about $6 million a year to Maine. Southern Maine Agency on Aging CEO Megan Walton says that funding has remained flat for a decade.
Currently, statewide, there is a waitlist of 744 people who are waiting for Meals on Wheels. And so for some people, that's been weeks. For other people, it's been over a year that they've been waiting.
Walton says she's concerned about the future of the Older Americans Act because the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services has closed the Administration for Community Living, which manages it. It's LGBTQ Pride Month, and 28 events are taking place in communities across Maine, from Kennebunk to Presque Isle, with several kicking off this past weekend. But the political climate has some community members wary, as Maine is in the national spotlight over transgender rights. And as Esther Pratt Kylie reports, Pride organizers say that's put extra focus on safety this year and on Pride's protest roots.
So the first thing is that assessment stance.
Clara Porter stands, knees bent, demonstrating how to assess a situation for threats. She's leading a Zoom training of about 30 people who all mirror her motions.
Look around the space that you're in. So look all around the space, including behind you. Are there things in the space that could be barriers to safety, whether they're objects or people or anything else?
Porter is the director of Prevention Action Change, a nonprofit that teaches de-escalation skills, bystander intervention, and self-defense. Participants join the training from every corner of the state, including Kennebunk, Bangor, and Goldsboro, all with the goal of learning safety skills ahead of June Pride events. Some are Pride organizers, others concerned citizens and volunteers. Porter is leading an exercise to practice engaging with detractors.
Because sometimes people will challenge your right to be there. So phrases such as, we have a right to be here, without, you know, in a loud voice, I'm not trying to escalate, I'm just saying it flat. We have a right to be here. Let's try that one together.
We have a right to be here.
It's part of a series of trainings organized in collaboration with several Maine nonprofits throughout May.
Equality Maine has certainly seen an increase in requests from Pride organizers around the state for all sorts of resources and information about accessibility, safety, contingency planning, and know your rights type of trainings.
Equality Maine's Heidi Lester attributes this largely to the shift in political climate since President Trump took office and the rise in hostility towards LGBTQ individuals across the country. Pride organizers in Maine, like Kate Turpin, the president of Wyndham Raymond Pride, says they feel the weight of responsibility in planning a safe Pride this year.
As Pride organizers, we're not just like having fun and throwing a party, but we're like actively resisting this tension and pressure. And like that comes with safety risks that need to really be considered.
Sam White, co-lead organizer of Bangor Pride, says they are doubling the number of volunteers who will act as peacekeepers during the event and partnered with Prevention Action Change, who ran the Zoom training, for the first time.
They'll be trained how to protect our festival goers from protesters, be a little bit more aware of de-escalation and things like that.
The Biden administration prioritized combating hate crimes towards marginalized groups like LGBTQ people, which trickled down to federal offices in Maine. Equality Maine worked closely with Maine's Department of Justice. They could point folks to resources after experiencing discrimination or hate crimes. But due to federal changes since Trump took office, Lester says those relationships don't exist anymore.
Missing our federal partners now, it's a loss.
But the political climate has also increased support and participation from the LGBT community and allies. Maine is center stage in the national fight over transgender rights. The Trump administration has sued the state for allegedly violating Title IX over its rules allowing transgender athletes to participate in girls' sports. For many, that is a rallying cry. Karma Amos is a committee member with Brunswick Pride.
More than ever in this environment with an administration that is targeting LGBTQ people, it is our moment not to cower, but to claim our courage in resisting that kind of hatred and restriction and the erosion of human rights.
Tanner Skelton is the interim chair of Pride Portland. He says they're expecting around 40,000 people this year.
Our community could possibly come out in numbers that we've never seen before to support the LGBTQ plus community in Maine.
Pride Month is celebrated in June to commemorate the 1969 Stonewall Riots, a landmark series of protests led by transgender activists against police raids at a New York City gay bar. Maine Transnet's Bree Danvers-Kidman says they hope people remember that Pride is rooted in the transgender community.
Pride is political. Pride has always been political. The first Pride was about stop mandating who we can be in public spaces. And to some extent, that's still the fight that we're all fighting this year.
Maine Pride organizers in Portland, Bangor, and smaller towns have not seen a pullback in sponsorship like other cities across the country. Some organizers even report an uptick in sponsors. As of the airing of this story, Equality Maine says there are no known threats towards Pride events in Maine this year. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Esther Pratt-Kiley.
Maine is home to hundreds of varieties of heirloom apple trees, often tucked away behind an old barn or at the edge of some forgotten farm. But apple historians have recently stumbled across what they say is one of the oldest living trees in North America, hiding in plain sight. And as Ari Snyder reports, it's believed to be the only known specimen of its kind this side of the Atlantic.
John, I remember this is a Tolman sweet.
Oh, that's the Tolman sweet. Oh, yeah.
At the end of a dirt road on Verona Island near Bucksport, a couple dozen wizened apple trees stand sentry in a grassy field sloping down to the Penobscot River. To the untrained eye, it's a bunch of old trees. To apple historian John Bunker, it's a treasure trove of pomological history.
Apple varieties that were grown commonly in Maine 100 to 200 to 250 years ago.
Cultivars such as the Tolman Sweet, Yellow Bellflower, and Transcendent Crabapple. Bunker has been crisscrossing the state for decades, combing through old fair records and ag reports and gathering firsthand accounts, all in an effort to track down certain varieties of historic apples.
But then the other thing you have is you have an old tree, but no name. So now it's like, who is this?
Bunker says that's what happened with the identification of one small, particularly old-looking tree at the far edge of this Verona Island orchard.
It looks to me as though it was once several times larger. Half the trunk is gone.
And what's left of the trunk is largely hollow. The brownish-gray bark is patterned with splotches of green moss and blue lichen. Three twisted limbs branch off to one side, pushing out a crown of spindly new growth adorned with delicate, light pink flowers. A couple years ago, some of Bunker's fellow apple historians sent leaf samples from this tree, along with hundreds of others, to a lab for genetic testing.
And we got this email saying, oh my goodness, you have found the only apple of this that we know of in North America.
Oh my God, yes, this is it.
It being the Drap d'Or de Bretagne, or Golden Cloth of Brittany in French. Cameron Peace, the tree fruit geneticist at Washington State University who coordinated the testing, says it's one of a few historic apples that are the genetic ancestors of many of the common varieties we eat today. He says the Verona Island tree is the only known living specimen in North America, and one of the oldest apple varieties still alive today.
Being oldest means it was least likely to be discovered, more likely that it's disappeared.
Peace says he can't determine the exact age of a tree based on a leaf sample alone, but the Maine Organic Farmers and Gardeners Association says it's at least 200 years old. And now it's got a sibling, technically a grafted clone, at Mofka's Heritage Orchard in Unity.
I'll make a clean cut on this branch.
Orchard manager CJ Walk demonstrates the grafting process, essentially fusing three twig cuttings from one tree onto the branch of another. He says preserving heirloom trees safeguards agricultural history and genetic traits that could offer keys to climate change adaptation.
And hoping that there are some resilient characteristics in some of these varieties that might help apple propagation into the future.
Bunker has also grafted cuttings into his own orchard in Palermo. With proper care, he says the Verona Island tree could still have quite a bit of life left in it.
Even though it's hollow and hardly rooted to the ground, you know, it can be there another 100 years. So long after we're all gone.
This fall, come harvest time, Bunker says the plan is to bring some of the apples to agricultural fairs, giving the public a chance to step 200 years back in time with a bite of the golden yellow, green-flecked drap d'or de Bretagne. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Ari Snyder.
And that's today's Maine News. For more stories, visit mainepublic.org. Coming up on Maine Calling at 11 o'clock tomorrow morning, communities that have played a role in Maine's LGBTQ+ history. I'm Nicole Ugrisco. Thanks for listening.